Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, sending away good jobs and diminishing our capability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make the kind of high-quality clothing staples you need for a comfortable, stylish, and active summer wardrobe. Like vintage-style tees, tough tank tops, breathable polos, lightweight sweatshirts, shorts, and so much more. All made right here in the USA. From growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
Welcome back to another episode of Open Floor, filling in for your host, Michael DePontina. I'm Rohan Nagpi, joined today by a very special guest. This is an episode for all the people in the reviews who are like, this show has gone downhill. All the people in the reviews who are like, this show sucks since Rohan joined. For all the emails we get for people who've been telling us they've been listening, original members of the Open Floor Globe, this episode is for you, because joining us today is a former senior writer at Sports Illustrated. You've also seen his work on Grantland. He's currently the co-host for My Money, my favorite basketball podcast, the one I look forward to listening to every week. He's the co-host of Greatest of All Talk. He also used to host this very show. It's Andrew Sharp. Sharp, how's it going, my man?
Oh, man. It is an honor to be back. It's always great to see my favorite member of Gen Z, Chef Roe himself. It's great to be here, man. And first and foremost, I think we gotta, you know, carve out some space to congratulate Michael Pina here. He's got young King Wesley in the fold. I mean, I'm sure he's gonna grow up to have so many insufferable Celtics takes, but it's a big win for Michael the Pod, man, allows me to be here.
Yes, in an ideal world, this kid has been born just after the last Celtics Finals appearance. For the next 40 years.
just born into mediocrity. You're absolutely exactly. Right.
I'm really excited that you're here. I've been wanting to do this. This is like, you know, a big part of our job is we got to book people, right? Like I got to book players to write stories on. You know, I'm trying to get so-and-so to agree to do the NBA preview issue. This is one of the hardest, you know, booking jobs I've had in my entire life. It was easier to get Jokic. You know, it was easier to get D Wade during his final season than it is to get Sharp. So
yeah,
appreciate you coming on, buddy.
I do feel guilty. I had big timed you a couple different times, and this week I just thought there's so much NBA news out there that I have to hop on and chop it up with Rohan. So here we are, a lot to work through. Great.
Yeah, you got the pen in your hand and everything.
I've got a pad. Yeah, absolutely, man.
Oh, man, incredible. So, Sharp, before we dive into the show, if you want to just real quick tell me where I rank in terms of all your coworkers ever. I'm assuming it's number one, obviously. I'm willing to settle for top three just if you want to be diplomatic about it. But I'm just curious where you have
so,
me on that.
That's really interesting. So all time for me, I'm not sure you're top three. You're definitely like top 5 to 7. You know how everybody's always like, well, there are eight different guys who are top 5 in the league right now. Right, you're right, in that course. 8. You're top 5.
I'm the Anthony Davis of your friends.
Yeah, you might be. But here's what I'll say, though. You are hands down my wife's favorite coworker
there
of all
we
time.
Go.
Because
there
you're
we go.
Regularly DMing her on Instagram, encouraging her with all of her baking exploits.
important note there, I'm not just constantly DMing her on Instagram. I'm constantly encouraging her on Instagram.
Right.
Because she's posting these works of art that are like beautiful. She's absolutely killing the baking game, and I'm like, somebody needs to recognize this.
She gets into LeBron mode. She posts like 25 part Instagram stories taking you through each step of the baking process, and I blame Great British Bake Off for inspiring this new addiction.
I thank Great British Bake Off. That's the difference between me and you, is I thank them, because this is exactly the kind of content that it, like, this is what I want to see. This is what I
want
to see personally.
Yeah. And I thank you, because you play the role that I probably should be playing in response to those baking experiments. And, you're good for my marriage. I'll put it that way. So, but yes, I would say solidly top 5. Where do I rank in your all time rankings?
Well, you just took a little bit of a hit, I gotta say. You just took a little bit of a hit. Heron's coming on strong now.
Oh wow! You
know? Yeah, yeah. So shout out to him, Andrew. We do have a little bit of, my opinion, an exciting episode to get to today, even without the crazy NBA news that we were hoping for. No Kevin Durant trade as of now, but shout out to our emailers. Kept the emails coming in even during the wasteland days of the offseason, of course. So thank you to the emailers. Keep the emails coming, openfloormail@gmail.com. But before we fully open up the mailbag, I've been listening to GOAT, you know, this offseason, and really enjoyed you and Ben ranking your top 5 rap songs of the first 5 years of the 2000s. Elite content. But I kind of heard you guys dance around this topic a little bit, so I thought I'd bring it to the show, because something we haven't really talked about on Open Floor yet, something I want to get to. Just a real blanket lob-up question here. And I'll let you go first. You can start with one team. You can start with multiple teams. Which teams have disappointed you the most so far this offseason?
Okay, so disappointing teams. You hit me with this a day ago, and I answered it as literally as I can. I'm not going to be out here. It's almost August, so I'm not going to be out here like tallying up cap sheets and
coming up with alternative plans
that I would have liked better. So what was most purely disappointing to me, I will start with the Golden State Warriors.
Ooh, it was fascinating.
Yeah, you know, it was so exhilarating to watch Steph Curry in the finals and realize he's still at that level. He's going to have another few years to compete at that level. And just, I mean, he's probably my favorite player of this generation. And I think a lot of people feel that way. And giving him the opportunity to contend for the next couple of years will make the whole sport more interesting. And you know, his game 4 in Boston was just pure evil. And it's just one of the coolest finals performances we've seen in a long time. I mean, him in game 4 is right up there with Giannis in game 6. And, they're just
Dwayne Wade
many
game
times.
3, 2006.
Yeah,
yep, I agree.
Exactly.
Right up there.
Well, there aren't many guys out there who can hit that level with regularity. And so, I'm excited for the final chapter of Steph's career here. And having said all that, I look at what the Warriors are bringing to the table next season, and I'm just a little bit concerned. They're going to be counting a lot on Jonathan Kuminga, counting a lot on James Wiseman, who basically hasn't been an NBA player for 18 months or so, and as a rookie, didn't look good enough. Didn't look like somebody a title team can count on. And, you know, I understand the cap sheet was really tight, and it would have been crazy, crazy expensive to bring back GP2. But at the same time, like, GP2 injected a lot of much-needed athleticism into their rotation.
I mean, they needed him in the finals. They needed him in the finals.
Exactly. And so I just, I do think people are overlooking how shaky the foundation is in the Bay next year. And it's going to require Steph to be unbelievable. And it will frankly require Clay to be better than he was to close the year. And maybe he can get there, but the big three will have their work cut out for them.
That's an interesting answer. I did not expect that. I did like them getting DiVincenzo on the cheap. I think he's actually going to be a pretty useful player for them. He's obviously not what GP2 is. Defensively, I do think he's going to hit a ton of wide-open threes that are going to annoy the hell out of fans next year. I mean, JaMychal Green is someone who I think can play in a playoff series at the very least. He's not a sexy signing. I mean, they also lost Otto Porter, who I thought was really important for them in the playoffs. I think we saw that Jordan Poole, I'm not sure about the playoff Jordan Poole experience. It's a lot different when you're not playing against the Nuggets missing three players.
Totally.
It's an interesting team with, I think Kuminga and Moody, there's going to be a lot of pressure on them to, by the end of the regular season, be ready to go for the playoffs.
Yes, and the caveat I would add in response to everything you just said is that if you believe in Dante DiVincenzo, then the Warriors offseason was mostly fine, and any hand-wringing that I'm doing is probably overdone. However, I think DiVincenzo kind of sucks, and I remember like watching him with Giannis and being like, oh my God, he's so close to being the wing the Bucks need, but he's just not that guy. And over again, he would disappoint me, but maybe he'll be more successful playing next to Steph Curry. Steph Curry makes everyone look like 20 to 30% better than they are. There will also be interesting chemistry questions next year as everyone tries to get paid. And everyone sees pretty clearly that not everyone will get paid. And so that'll make things fairly interesting.
I mean, it's looming over them right now. I think Draymond is extension eligible this summer before this season starts. It's going to start quickly. I mean, Draymond rightfully should ask for a max contract. Mm-hmm. I think Clay will probably try to ask for a max as well. It's going to be interesting. That is a good pick. That's a really good pick. I'm with you. I like when there's a degree of difficulty for Steph, though, if I'm being perfectly honest.
Okay.
Watching him go game four mode, as the kids would say. I want to see more of Steph having to go game four mode.
Hey, Ro, just so you know, the kids would actually say that Steph was going goblin mode in game four.
I don't think they would be saying that's
my role in your life. I have to keep you up to date on the slang out there.
I appreciate it. Yeah.
Really glad to be here.
Every Uber driver who's ever had Andrew as a rider has me to thank for the money they made on that ride. That's all I'm going to say.
It's really embarrassing. In 2018, Ro had to teach me how to use Uber, and it served me well ever since. I'm indebted to you for life.
It's just such a late time. Yep. I guess you don't have it in college. That was a big innovation for us. I'll leave it at that. But the Warriors are an interesting pick. I have faith in A, DiVincenzo, B. I liked what I saw from Kuminga at times last year. I mean, he had a little bit of playoff run and didn't look awful. I mean, you could really only use him as a specialist in certain matchups. If the shot gets going a bit, I thought Kuminga, this is such a creepy phrase, but I'm going to use it. He had an NBA-ready body, which you like to see from rookies. You know, he's a big dude. He's a big dude.
Kuminga and Wiseman are both gigantic.
Yes,
and
yes.
Wiseman, even among big men, Wiseman is like 20% bigger than almost any other big guy in the league. And so if they can put it together, that's another path to the Warriors being totally fine. I think Moody is legitimately good and is a guy they can rely on and will really be helpful through Steph's twilight. Kuminga and Wiseman are two other guys I'm not really sold on, but who knows?
If I'm putting you on the spot, who do you think their biggest competition in the West is right now?
First of all, I really hope your answer is your Denver Nuggets.
I wish my answer was my Denver Nuggets. I think my answer is the Clippers of Los Angeles, though.
Yes, it's got to be the Clippers. And frankly, you look at the Clippers and Warriors rosters right now, and I mean, I don't know. Do you put an asterisk next to Paul George's name, next to Kawhi's name, because we just like haven't seen those guys stay healthy ever since they arrived in L.A.? Maybe you do, and in that case, Golden State still has the edge. But I mean, I think if everyone's healthy, the Clippers are a better team right now.
I feel like I've spent more time waiting for Kawhi Leonard to speak after games than actually watching him play since he joined the Clippers.
I mean, that's the thing. You and Golliver thought you had it all figured out being in LA. And really, all that means is like an extra hour and a half after every game waiting for Kawhi and LeBron.
Or flying to Phoenix in June, which is lovely. Lovely that time of year.
100%.
I'm going to give you my most disappointing team, and it's been percolating on this podcast. People have heard me mention it, and you're going to think it's like a homer pick, but I'm being 100% serious. It's got to be the Miami Heat for me. A team that was clearly very close to making the NBA Finals. I was skeptical of them all season long on this podcast. I was like, they're going to flame out in the playoffs. They don't have the half-court offense. I mean, the half-court offense was bad, but they came way closer to making the finals than I ever imagined. And a huge part of that was Jimmy Butler just going, I think, to a whole different level during the playoffs that I don't think any of us expected him to all of a sudden become the scorer that he was. And I think this is a team that I don't know if they were necessarily a move away, but maybe you add in a guy or two or find a way to swing a move, get in a different scorer, maybe move Hero and Robinson for someone who can play in the playoffs, and you kind of help address some of the issues you had in terms of half-court scoring. Instead, I don't know if it's just because they've been playing this waiting game with Donovan Mitchell and Kevin Durant, but they've done nothing. I mean, they re-signed Caleb Martin. They don't have a power forward on this team. I mean, losing PJ Tucker, it's gotten to become a little bit of a meme, like on Heat Twitter, like how important was PJ Tucker, but like even if you just throw out the statistics for a second, like, you know, I did a story on Max Strus and I was like, what's been the biggest key for you growing as a defender from game one of the season to, you know, game seven of the conference finals? And he's like, PJ Tucker in my ear every day. Like, you don't just simply replace a guy like that who not only defends, not only, you know, connects on offense, isn't a zero on the floor, but getting people in the right place, et cetera. I think he's like, that's a huge loss for them. And beyond that, it's not only to lose him. A, losing to Philly. B, they don't have a replacement. Like, I think they're going to play Caleb Martin. They're going to play Caleb Martin at power forward. That's just simply not going to work.
So you're not a Caleb Martin believer? He's always been kind of spicy off the bench for them. I wouldn't start him. But
I'm a fan of Caleb Martin, and I think that injuries hurt him. I expected more from him in the playoffs. I think he just slowed down. He was like dealing with some kind of injury all year long.
Yeah.
I think he's part of the playoff rotation. I don't think he's your starting power forward. I mean, they're going to kill it on the glass. I mean, they're between him and Bam. It's like 6'7", 6'9" guys playing in the front court. I just think they're like, I mean, they got not lucky last year, but Lowry kept things afloat when Jimmy and Bam were hurt. But I think if they get another regular season injury, like, wouldn't shock me if they slipped to the play-in.
Can I ask you something? Do you consider yourself part of the Yurt 7 hive?
I am not part of the Yurt 7 hive. And the people, the genuine tweets I see that are like, the Heat need to play Yurt 7 and Bam together. literally make me like, what are we do? What are we, why are we even writing and talking about basketball? Because clearly it's not having an impact.
Look, man, he had, yeah, seriously. The public is not paying attention.
Yeah.
He put up some nice numbers. No, I'm with you across the board on the Heat. You know, and they're one of those teams where it's difficult because the follow-up question is, well, what would you have had them do? And the reality is there's just not much flexibility for them to do anything. I'm sure they're calling Danny Ainge every day trying to get Donovan Mitchell. I'm sure Sean Marks has had to block Pat Riley's number because, like, no, we're not interested in Duncan Robinson and Tyler Herro as the centerpiece for a Kevin Durant trade. But save any of those, like, Hail Mary moves, you know, they're capped out and there's just only so much they can do. And that's why losing PJ Tucker hurts so much. It's not really that PJ Tucker is good, but I mean, PJ Tucker's fine. Like, I think his addition in Philadelphia is pretty overrated.
Wow.
But they just don't have an alternative. and they don't have money to spend. They don't have assets to trade. And so in that case, it takes them from the championship contender tier, although, like, I don't know, do you feel like they were in that top group by the end of the season?
I never felt that they were, but last year especially was such a weird season. I think any of the final I still think the Suns are better than the Mavs. That's like my worst take.
No, it's accurate.
I think
things got really weird with Suns Mavs. We'll never understand what happened, but they don't have to elevate Dallas above Phoenix.
If they played that game 1,000 times, the one time Dallas blows them out is the one that happened in that, like.
Well, yeah, and if they play it in any other month of the season, like, I just don't know. Maybe COVID was involved. Like, who knows what was happening with the Suns? But I don't put that on the talent.
I just think right now there's no runaway favorite in the NBA, and so a team like Miami last year, maybe this year will be different, had a legitimate chance. The coaching was good enough. I think that they had enough weird stuff that they could do. I'm also low on Herro, and I would trade him and Duncan Robinson for Harrison Barnes tonight. Throw in a protected 2029 first. Yeah.
You are low on Herro. Man,
Trade him and Dunk for, and I like Duncan. I actually really like Duncan. Incredible what he did as an undrafted player coming into this league. That's no disrespect to him, but, you know, you got to attach an asset to Herro. That's why I'm sending him and Tyler out to Sacramento for Harrison Barnes.
That's my move for them. Things are getting a little dark in Miami. Yeah. Its eyes to Harrison Barnes.
Dude, I see people be like, oh, Herro was injured during the playoffs. And I'm like, I think he was just getting, like, packed up by people who were actually determined to defend him. And he wasn't playing against backups in the second quarter anymore. And that makes a big difference.
It could be. I can't really tell with Herro, or it's Herro. I've called him Herro.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I can't really tell who you're talking about. Yeah, my favorite part about listening to the pod is when you're like, Herro.
Yeah, it's my bad. Thank you for helping me address that blind spot. No, with Herro, there are flashes where he looks like a guy who can create offense in the half court and reliably get to his spots and is just really valuable, like Devin Booker-ish. He's not Devin Booker, but, like, has a lot of the same skills at his best. But, yeah, he just couldn't get by people in this year's playoffs, and he was getting abused on defense, where someone like Devin Booker has really fought to make himself half decent on that end and not a total liability. Yes. And that would be the step. Max Strus, exactly right. Like, they were just better with Strus on the floor. Mm-hmm. And so Hero's going to have to make that transition. And it's an open question as to whether he can actually do it. But I did enjoy the end of the year when Pat Riley was like, he's not a starter. Like, he's got to figure out the defensive side of the ball, and then maybe we could talk. I think that's the right message to send at this point.
That was reassuring to me, because my fear is that they're way higher on him than they need to be. And it was actually reassuring for me to hear Pat Riley say that, because I think the expectations for him have gotten a little out of control, and like, I don't think he's going to be a perennial all-star. The defense worries me a ton. Like you said, they're a guy, and you know, it's tough. Strus is like a bigger guy, longer arms. I think it makes it a little bit easier for him to defend certain wings, but you got to at least be able to survive a few possessions here and there. And, you know, it got to the point where I was terrified every time he was on the floor in the playoffs. So that's one more for me. Do you have any others that you wanted to talk about?
Yes, I have two others that I'll throw out there. The first is the Bucks.
Yes.
I'm a little bit worried that they are planning to rely on Brook Lopez as heavily as they're going to need to next year, because I've worried about Brook Lopez falling off a cliff for like the last couple seasons. And it's obviously he missed most of last season, and just the injury history coupled with his age would make me cautious. And they didn't really find a replacement for him, like a JaVale McGee type guy. They're running it back with Serge Ibaka, who most people don't even realize is still in the NBA. And I would have liked to see more. What a precipitous
fall for Serge Ibaka.
Well, like, yeah, he had a great couple of years. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's had a great career, but I don't really understand the rationale in Milwaukee.
He couldn't get any run during the playoffs. It was, I mean, I don't even know if he was healthy, honestly. I have no idea. No one talks about him anymore.
Yeah, well, and in the playoffs, you saw the cracks start to show with Milwaukee's rotation. Like, they just didn't have many players they could play at the end of that Celtics series.
It didn't help that Grayson Allen was still starting games. That was ridiculous.
Ugh, yeah, Grayson Allen was starting, and like, I mean, they should play Javon Carter more, and they did bring him back, so they get credit for that. But bringing in Joe Ingles, I feel like that's the type of move that gets praised in July and doesn't move the needle next April and May. And so, I was just sort of like underwhelmed by what they did. And I think a lot of people across the basketball media are saying, well, the Bucks had the best team this year and probably would have won the championship if Chris Middleton never got hurt. And that may be true. I think I agree with that, but that also isn't something I would tell myself if I were like the front office and saying like, let's just run it all back with our creaky rotation and a bunch of different injury prone guys. Like and adding Ingles is another guy who's like, I don't know, at this point in his career,
he's coming off an ACL tear. He was already looked like he was maybe losing a step before it. I mean, they just put way too much pressure on Giannis. I mean, I think what's lost in like that 50 point game he had in game six of the finals is the fact that they needed every single last one of those points. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't like a blowout. Like, they need him to go nuclear. I mean, against the Celtics, I mean, it felt like their only chance was when, you know, Giannis was going nuts. He's going off for like 20 and a half, and like, that's their only way they're able to keep it close. Drew Holiday, bless his heart, I love him. He's shooting like 5 of 17 every night, like 7 of 22. Really disappointing offseason, especially because it feels like the East is there for the taking. And when you couple it, unfortunately, with a team like Boston has done, Boston's had maybe the best offseason of any team, you could argue. Basically losing nobody of consequence from their playoff rotation instead of adding two guys who can definitely play in the playoffs. Really disappointed in the Bucks. I mean, I love Wesley Matthews. Like, a lot of pressure on him to continue to ask him to be your number one perimeter defender. I don't know. I look at the bench because
you look at what their options were. There's not that much flexibility, but like Bruce Brown signing with the Nuggets for the mid-level. If they signed Bruce Brown, I would have been really excited. I would have been like, yeah, that's definitely a guy who can play deep into the playoffs and be like your seventh man and spell some of the guards for 20 to 25 minutes. The other idea I had for them before, ironically, the Nuggets swooped in, I would have tried to trade for KCP and see what the Wizards were asking for and have him be the third guard. Those are the types of guys, like a little bit younger, a little bit more athletic, that I think could really help them. And I guess they just decided that either they couldn't get any of those guys, or they like the creation from Ingles or something like that. I don't really know, but it's going to require Giannis to be superhuman again, and maybe he can do it.
Yeah. Shout out to the Nuggets, by the way. I heard you talk about them on a recent pod you did. I love the KCP Bruce Brown signings. I'm just going to throw this out there. I've been talking about this on this podcast for a long time. They should trade MPJ. They should absolutely trade MPJ. Another team that Harrison Barnes would look sick on. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, and so the real take was back in the bubble when MPJ had blown up a little bit. That might have been the time to trade him.
Yes.
His stock was sky high, and everybody was talking themselves into like MPJ as another Kevin Durant or 7 foot Klay Thompson, whatever you want to say. And now I don't know if they could get anything for MPJ. Like, certainly not until he plays like half a season healthy. But even then, on that deal with his sketchy ass injury history, it'd be tough for them to really remake the roster in a productive way with an MPJ trade.
I don't disagree. They may have missed the boat on that one, and maybe I don't think you just simply don't even need him, Murray, and Jokic. You want the ball in those two guys' hands. Yes, it's Watching him, you can tell his back is messed up, and it's unfortunate, honestly, but you can tell he has a back issue watching him try to get into defensive stance, right? Because it's clearly an issue for him.
It's painful.
All right, Sharp, let's get to some emails here. We got a lot of good emails today. This one's from Al, a longtime listener from Michigan. What up, Al? He goes,
what
Rohan
up,
and
Al?
Chris. Sorry, Chris. I know Mike is gone, finally, but going over the last podcast regarding Jaylen Brown and Kevin Durant, I find myself looking at the Jason Tatum-Jaylen Brown experiment as the former McGrady-Carter combo in Toronto. We all wonder what could have been if McGrady stayed in Toronto. Do you guys feel if Jaylen Brown leaves the Celtics, he would blow up as a leading scorer in the NBA like McGrady? Andrew, your thoughts.
Interesting. If Jaylen Brown leaves the Celtics, I do think he would blow up in a similar way. I could see him averaging like 28 or 30 a game. I think he wouldn't be as good as Tracy McGrady. Like, Tracy McGrady at his peak was
first
team, second team, all NBA. I don't think Jaylen is good at the rest of basketball.
Put T-Mac on the early 2000s Lakers. That's all I'm going to say.
Like, T-Mac, he could have done a lot of damage, and had Grant Hill been healthy, that magic thing would have been pretty interesting. So I don't put Jaylen in that category. I do think if Jaylen Brown is separated from Jason Tatum, we'll look back and be like, whoa, like, those two guys were really great together. And it's crazy that they were on the same team. But I don't know how you feel about Jaylen. I look at his game and I feel like he's a little bit one-dimensional. And because he worked hard on defense early in his career, he hasn't really been he hasn't gotten the, like, bucket getter label, the like scorer only label, maybe empty stats sometimes. But I think all of that can apply to Jaylen. And so I'm reluctant to put him in like all-star superstar conversations, because I think he's a tier below.
Interesting. I think he's definitely an all-star caliber player. There are moments I thought that during this postseason run, he was the best player on the floor. Obviously, I think overall it was still Tatum, but he went off for 40 in a finals game. And there's just some nights where, like, when the jump shot's going, you're like, how are you stopping this guy? He's hitting step back threes or like stare down threes. Like, what are you supposed to do? I look at his, not necessarily maybe as talented as Anthony Davis, but in the category of, if he's your number two to like a true number one, you're in fantastic shape. If he's your lead guy, I like him less. Like, so I wrote this week why I don't like the Nets trade for either side, Durant for Brown, because I think the Celtics have like an 8-year window right now between, as long as Jason and Jalen are playing together. I think they're going to make, they're going to be in the conference finals mix for the next 8 years as long as they keep those guys together. Durant, everyone's talking about he's on a 4-year contract. He's going to be 34 when the season starts. Like, are you counting on him to be Kevin Durant by age 37? With, he's not finished the last two regular seasons healthy. Or, I mean, he hasn't had healthy regular seasons for a couple years. He has the Achilles injury. I think you're looking at, like, a 2-year window with KD versus – it's not as open of a window, but an 8-year one with Jason and Jalen. Like, I think Jalen Brown's a max player on the right team, which is he needs a running mate like Tatum. But yeah. I think he could put up stats as a number one guy, and the team would be frisky, but they wouldn't ultimately go anywhere, is kind of how I feel about him. So he's like a 1.5.
Interesting. I think he's a 2.5. I'm not sure he's really that guy. And when you look at what makes the Celtics great, it's their defense, and their offense has always been a little bit of an issue relying on those two guys. And I also look at Jalen's defense as being just a tad overrated. So I don't know. I would do the deal if I were the Celtics. And if I could keep Marcus Smart, it would be like a no-brainer. Like, how fast can I say yes if I'm Brad Stevens? If I have to give up Marcus Smart, then it's a little trickier in terms of like whether there's enough there to contend and win a title with Kevin Durant. And they just would be relying a lot on Malcolm Brogdon, who hasn't been healthy for long stretches of his career. So I don't know. But I do look at Jalen as like an NBA success story, in that he has made the absolute most of like his tools, and he's just come leaps and bounds from where he was as a rookie. But I wonder, number one, how much more growth there is. I also wonder if he would want to stay in Boston. I think a lot of people are sort of taking that for granted. And you look at Jalen, he's always been pretty worldly. He's also like pretty closely aligned with Kyrie, and Kyrie hated it in Boston. And I think the mistake a lot of people have made in analyzing the Celtics calculus here is framing this as a choice between Kevin Durant for 3 years and Jason Tatum and Jalen Brown for like 10 years. I don't know that that's realistic. I think Jalen could try to leave regardless of what happens with this deal.
Very interesting. I mean, yeah, he definitely seemed to not necessarily love being mentioned in trade rumors, which is another kind of interesting thing when something like that leaks. I mean, I don't think it's like if they lose a playoff game 8 months from now, it's going to be like, well, that trade rumor was on his mind. But I'm interested to see if that, like you said, maybe it's another factor that maybe could one day push him out the door. But I'm a fan of Jalen Brown. But I think we're both on the same page that Tracy McGrady was sick. And that very few people are like Tracy McGrady, who is like maybe arguably the player from that time I would most like to see play now, like non-center division. Like, obviously we all want to see Shaq play in 2022. My Instagram, like, for your page or whatever, or like, I don't know what it's called.
What, the algorithms or whatever?
Yeah.
Like the recommendations?
Yeah,
algorithms,
like,
or whatever. I sound like I'm 85 like, years old.
it's like 55% Shaq highlights or Shaq quotes, like Shaq anecdotes. Great. Like, it's like one of them was like Shaq being like, there was a geek in my high school. Like, it's like he's using geek like it's like an ethnicity almost. He's like, yeah, we had a geek in my class. Like, we called him something. Like, he couldn't remember his real name, just the nickname they had for him.
Just knew him as Geek?
And he's like, yeah, we had this geek. Like, we called him whatever. And he's like, everyone would pick on the geek. And then one day I went up to him and I was like, hey, like, no one's messing with the geek anymore. And then he tutored me because I was, and it's the only reason I went to college. Like, there's crazy Shaq stories like that.
That's
or just
awesome.
Highlights. Like, I just watched a highlight the other day. It was like Shaq scoring on David Robinson and just throwing him like 6 feet backwards towards the basket. And it's like, yeah, I want to see this guy play now, but Tracy McGrady, yes, a legend, and could. He was really, really good. Like
not only T-Mac, though, if we're talking Shaq, I look at his arc in media as one of the more improbable stories of the last, like, 20 years in basketball. Because, look, inside the NBA was perfect when Shaq joined in 2010. Yes. And I think it was 2010. It was around that area. And I remember hearing Shaq pop up on those shows. He was a little insecure around Barkley. Yes. He would take jokes too personally. He would interject at the wrong times. And I was pissed off. I was like, look.
Yes, Shaq, it was annoying the first couple years.
This is a hallowed institution that you are sabotaging on a weekly basis. What is going on here? Why is everyone okay with this? And over the years, Shaq has gotten much better on TV. And he's now someone that I regularly enjoy. And I don't know if I would say I look forward to him, but he's a lot of fun. And I just back in like 2011, I was like, get this guy off my television and save inside the NBA. But now he's part of the gang.
That's my favorite show on television. It's not close. And I love when they do the post game interview and Shaq gets, you know, it's like Charles Barkley always gets the first question. Or Ernie does, and Shaq's like, big fella here. He's just like, he just asks this question. It's incredible. It's truly my favorite show on TV. We could do a whole hour on Inside the NBA. But I wanted to get to this question because this is another team that I think Herring and I identified as maybe had a disappointing offseason, but we got a question about them. So I want to get to them here in the mailbag. This is from Juan Pablo, who goes, hi, Rohan and Chris, and so happy to hear about Michael's babe. He says, what's the going rate on the Mavs slander these days? Is this funding Rohan's travels? In all seriousness, I keep hearing folks say the Mavs need to make bigger moves around Luka. And while I completely understand the sentiment and feel it too, what can a team that is so strapped for assets really do? I thought the Wood trade was genius, given that we lost players that were not hitting the rotation. But given how much the previous front office hampered the team, we're left with two choices in the short run. Trade all of our depth for a number two, keep adding ancillary pieces with the little we have, and still put all our eggs in the Luka basket. The situation will change in the next couple of years as we get our own picks and some contracts are set to expire. But what either of you do right now with the team that is stuck this way? Thank you for the awesome show, Juan Pablo. Sharp, I'm kind of like, you know, we talked about the Mavs last week as maybe a team that could miss the playoffs. Next season is one that made it last year. Yeah, it was a... That was a little masala from Herring that I was picking up what he was putting down. Yeah. I liked it a lot. Let me tell you. Your thoughts on the Mavs, I'm not going to lie, there's been a little bit of slander on the pod. He's not wrong. We have not been fans of their offseason. Your thoughts.
Very interesting. I just Googled Western Conference standings and the WNBA came up. That's not what I'm looking for. I want to read through the West and see whether that Mavs take is actually viable. It sounds like a pretty good take because you look at,
you got to imagine the Clippers make it next year.
Yeah. I mean, I also think the Kings are going to be frisky, a dangerous thing to say. Yeah.
And I'm not saying they're going to be good, but I can't completely rule out the idea of LeBron making the playoffs.
Yeah, of course. They're going to be in the mix. Now, the Mavs, the reason I would entertain the idea of them missing the playoffs entirely is because Luka, over the past couple seasons, has had stretches where he's missed like 10 or 15 games. And if 10 or 15 becomes 20 or 25, then things will get really, really dicey for that team. Because I think Luka on his own is good enough to make them a decent regular season team. But beyond that, I don't really know what they are bringing to the table. I mean, look, I'm with you on all the Mavs slander, just for the record. Like, Jason Kidd's interview from Vegas, he was on like NBA Today or something and said, we're planning on starting JaVale McGee and Christian Wood next year, and maybe Dinwiddie too. It was like the most depressing starting lineup you could possibly imagine is what kid was like touting on ESPN, and it was an eye-opening moment
for me.
That's
like some kid on 2K who has never played with the Mavericks before, never watched one of their games. It's like, just give me the guys with the five best overall in the starting lineup. I don't care what positions they play. Yeah.
Well, and here's what I would add. I still don't think Jason Kidd is a good coach. Like, watched him.
Man. He's like, you're like, this isn't my normal podcast. I can say whatever I want.
I can say whatever I want here. It's August. Nobody's listening to these podcasts. It's fine. I think a lot of people were like, oh, well, we were wrong about Jason Kidd. I don't know. I watched Jason Kidd in the Bucks or coaching the Bucks, and I remember how maddening it was to watch him manage games, and I think some of that could be coming in Dallas over the next few years. The honeymoon might be over. And as far as like their offseason, the one piece that I understand why you would trade for Christian Wood if you're trying to like cover your ass and not look terribly depressing during the regular season. But if the goal is actually to like win with Luka and win long term or even short term, like make the second round, make the third round, be able to hang with the best teams in the NBA. I've seen enough Christian Wood to not believe in that guy. And even though I understand the gamble conceptually, it's a bad bet if you just know it's not going to work. And that's how I feel about Wood.
We've also seen enough Maxi Kleber to know like, oh, this guy's like pretty helpful for them in the playoffs. And mm-hmm. like a big, like kind of the straw that stirs the drink in some ways because of what he lets them do when they go small. And it's been a weird offseason for them. On one hand, I'm glad they didn't necessarily go all in on this team that had, again, this is not to take, they won that game 7 in Phoenix. I was there. Luka's performance was unlike anything I'd ever seen in person before. But it was shocking to say the least, okay? It was shocking to say the least.
Oh, yeah.
Look, so on one hand,
we can say out loud, like, they're not a conference finalist. Like, that, they're not that level of team after last year. It was a weird year in the West, and the Suns just totally collapsed and, like, self-combusted. So, I don't know.
And the healthy Nuggets and Clippers, I think, are going to overtake them next year. But, yeah. So, on one hand, I'm glad they aren't, like, let's go fully commit to this team. But I think losing Brunson obviously hurts them. Dinwiddie is not Brunson, is not him, as you guys would like to say.
Dinwiddie is definitely not him.
Not him. And it's going to be kind of a weird team. I'm interested to see the pieces fit together. I mean, could they play Wood and Kleber together? I guess. I just don't know how it all going to work in the playoffs. They gave JaVale McGee money, too. They're like, yo, JaVale, here you go.
It's going to be, it will be really interesting to see what, because first of all, I look at it, and this is probably not giving them enough credit. I look at the Mavs as like in that 6-10 range in the West, and I don't really have any question about their cast next year. And it will be interesting to see if that's how it actually plays out, because look, they could be better. They could be the third best team in the West or something like that. But if it plays out where they follow up the conference finals by finishing like 7th or 8th and have to work their way through the play-in round, I wonder how Luka responds and what the front office can even do to sort of address some of the discontent that is probably going to arise. I don't know. It'll be complicated, more complicated than you would think for a team that has like one of the five best players in the NBA and maybe the best young guy.
I would like to see Jason Kidd go on Shark Tank and pitch that Christian Wood, JaVale McGee idea in front of the Sharks. I would like to see that. Let's move on to another question. This one comes in from Pierre. He says, hello. Another angle on how rings culture is poisoning basketball We have career role players like J.R. Smith saying that Damian Lillard will rot in Portland if he stays. I ask this in complete sincerity. If after this season Damian Lillard forced his way out of Portland and won a ring with the Clippers, are you really viewing his career any differently than if he stays in Portland and has a few more eye-popping playoff moments with nothing more? Why does everything need to be validated with a ring? He's had an amazing career so far with multiple iconic moments. He's a legend in Portland. Just feels lazy to reduce everything down to, but he did he win a ring? Can we get Steve Novak's take? Thanks.
Is that an inside joke related to something else you guys have said here?
The Steve Novak thing?
Yeah.
No, I think he's just making fun of J.R. Smith, actually, which is kind of a little bit of a low blow at J.R. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think it's a good question, man.
We don't have a running Steve Novak. Yeah, but I'll see if we can start one today. Yeah.
That threw me for a loop in the rundown. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, do you have thoughts? I think it is a very important point for people to sort of imagine the alternatives for Lillard.
Yes. I wrote this when he had that series against the Nuggets. Like, there's that double overtime game, and it's like they're triple teaming him as soon as he gets off half court, and he's still bombing. You're like, okay, surely they won't let him shoot and make another game-tying three, but that's exactly what he does, like, every time down the floor. And I feel like Lillard's catching a lot of heat. People are like, he should ask out. Oh, he took the money. Oh, his quote is corny. I'm fully in his corner on this one. I think he's right. I think it's awesome that he stayed. He would make this much money no matter which team he went to. I don't think that's what's motivating him right now. I think he genuinely likes what he has in Portland. And I agree. Like, it wouldn't be satisfying him to join some other team. And then when if they were to, let's say, the Lakers are to blow up in a couple years and somehow Anthony Davis gets to Portland, that would be really exciting. I'd like to see something like that. But, yeah, to me, it would not be satisfying at all to watch him win a ring on another team at this point. I agree with Pierre completely. He's had so many iconic moments. For you to say he's not a winner or he's not capable of winning, like, is preposterous to me. I mean, he's literally ended multiple playoff series. Has any other player done that, like, in the last 25 years? No, he's one of my favorite players. I love watching him play. I don't question, like, his ability to win at all. You know, they ran into the Warriors. I don't think the Warriors win 5 titles if you switch Steph and Dame. Do I think they could maybe win 1? Maybe.
Yeah, probably. Well, I don't know.
One of the KD ones.
Yeah, well, sure.
Yeah.
But you can win a fake title, absolutely.
Yeah.
So
I'm with Pierre on this one. Your thoughts?
Okay, I have a couple different thoughts after hearing your response and rereading the question. Number one, I wasn't part of the rings culture conversation that seems to have occurred on this show earlier this week. I think rings culture is often blamed for guys who are just competitive and want to win. And so I don't necessarily think that it's like the way we talk about basketball is forcing guys to go to better teams. I think part of it is that the NBA's salary structure right now makes it really hard for teams who have a little bit of success and then pay their guys who are responsible for that success. Like, there's just not that much flexibility. It's why Dallas is in such a tough spot.
Yeah, you can't not max out CJ McCollum. You know what I mean? Like, they had to give him that contract.
It's really did. The Blazers are a great example. The Mavs are also a good example. The Celtics, would they be considering a Jaylen Brown trade if they were confident they could sign him for the max and not pay like $100 million in luxury tax every year? Mm-hmm. Like, it drives a lot of the player movement. And it's sort of like this hidden force in the NBA where I think a lot of people are like, oh, well, today's players, today's superstars don't care about loyalty or anything like that. Or there are people who are like, well, this is what NBA Twitter has done to basketball. Everybody feels like they need to go win a ring. When I just think the structure of the league needs to be reworked in the next CBA, and you need to make it easier for guys to stay home and actually compete, because, like, Portland is exhibit A. They signed Evan Turner to a bad deal, and it just killed like 5 years of their franchise, and they still haven't really recovered. Now it's just kind of a mess out there. So yeah. Part two of that conversation is that Damian Lillard, Neil O'Shea was such a terrible GM, and like I kind of want more for Dame. I would love to see mm-hmm. him on a good team. And the way this question is framed, obviously Dame staying in Portland is cooler than him going to the Clippers, which is like the most cynical basketball enterprise we have right now, like as soulless as it gets. And I'm ready to pull for the Clippers next year. I just, we can call it what it is. But if Lillard, if he was traded to like the Wolves, for instance, and it was Lillard, Anthony Edwards, and Rudy Gobert going at the league for the next couple years, like I think that would be really fun.
You won't see Lillard and Gobert.
I'm not a Gobert hater. Everyone else hates Gobert. I'm willing to give him a shot. But yeah, like flip cat for Lillard.
But yeah, seeing him on that kind of team would still be satisfying to an extent. I don't know. Let's say somehow like Chet is the truth in Oklahoma City and Shea is incredible. Like, what if he went to freaking OKC and all of a sudden they were like awesome again? Like, remember their playoff games were awesome when that game was full.
Well, and I look at it like, do people wish that Kevin Garnett had stayed in Minnesota for the remainder of his career? Like, no, it wound up being a much cooler story with him going to Boston. And I do put guys who have stayed loyal as long as Dame has in another category. Like, there's a point at which loyalty gets a little bit crazy, because it's like, look, these guys haven't put a even like second round level team around you in the last 5 years or so.
I'll say this. I would love to see him stay in Portland. I love that team. I love that city. I love those uniforms. I love watching him play in that uniform. But to your point about KG, he's earned the right to ask out if he wants to at any point. And people are like, oh, like, I see some people like, why are fans hustling backwards? Why would they want their star player to leave? Sometimes you literally do love your star player so much, you can accept that your front office has not done its job and you do want to see him go in somewhere. So I would support it, and I agree. I don't want to see it with the Clippers. I don't want to see him go to one of these kind of like ready-made super teams. That's always less fun. But yeah, if he was able to go to like the right mix of an up-and-coming small market, that would be a ton of fun. It would be cool to see kind of a new city get to experience that. I want to close with one last email because this is a fun one, and I'm going to bet you have some good answers here.
Okay.
This is Ollie from Detroit. What's up? With the reveal of more modernized jerseys, such as the new Cleveland and Utah ones, those Jazz jerseys are heinous, by the way. Absolutely awful. I will be actively watching less of their games this year because of the jerseys.
Yes.
A lot of fans have started to criticize the NBA's shift towards overly modernized corporate designs for their logos and jerseys. I think the want for more classic designs has grown even more after the Pistons revealed their throwback city jerseys, bringing back the fabled teal that younger fans have been clamoring for. An iconic jersey, to say the least. How do you guys feel about the modern approach that teams have taken toward their designs? Personally, I'm just glad the teal is back. I own a Grant Hill one myself. Also, what's some of your favorite classic and current NBA jerseys? This is a great question. Sharp, I'm just going to speak for both of us real quick and say modern jerseys suck. They're not good. The real question I have is, what are your favorite throwback jerseys, and more importantly, which ones do you own?
Wow. Okay. So, which ones do I own? First of all, I do need to echo your sentiments on modern NBA jerseys and how boring they've gotten. Like the Cavs jerseys, people can Google them. The white Cavs jersey with the hoop around the V is really, really nice. They did a great job there. They seem to have just mailed it in with these other two jerseys. They have a maroon jersey and a black jersey, and both of them look like practice jerseys. Just a complete waste of everyone's time rolling those out with the redesign. And that's how most jerseys have been. It's so stupid. And yep. I saw the teal
Jazz
jersey.
Ones
yeah, well, the Jazz
a
ones.
Crime.
Like, honestly,
crime.
It's not hyperbole. Like, what you said is exactly how I feel about the Jazz, where it's like, okay, so if that's your uniform, like, I'm not going to be able to watch your games next
yeah.
year. Like, this
yeah.
is really, yeah. really rough. So, all right, your question about favorite throwbacks. I owned a Atlanta Hawks Pete Maravich throwback. It was like my
yes.
big purchase
you
when I was 13
years old.
Strike me
as somebody who'd love Pistol Pete, to say the least.
Oh my God. Yeah. I have a Kevin Durant Supersonics jersey, which
yep,
is a prized possession of mine. Now, as far as like favorite designs, like the Bulls were one of my favorite growing mm-hmm. up. Like I had the pinstripe Jordan jersey, and I do think
they're
one of the teams.
The script Chicago throwback is another, I think, really underrated one that doesn't get talked about enough. It's just Chicago across mm-hmm. the front in cursive on it. Those ones are sick.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are certain teams that should stick with the classic look, like the Lakers, the mm-hmm. Celtics, the Bulls, mm-hmm. the Knicks. I hated when the Knicks on Christmas Day were wearing
the black
those
jerseys?
Awful alternate jerseys. It's like, dude,
so
you're the
dude,
Knicks.
I could not agree more.
Yes. The only reason they're allowed to host a game on Christmas is because people are nostalgic for what they were like
yes,
35 years
exactly.
ago.
Because the team is not worth it. And it's like they're playing on a black court, and it's like, who is this for? Like, who wanted this?
Yeah, there's some basic quality control issues that the league needs to get under control. The Suns had some cool uniforms in the 90s and have
I mean, the Suns, the purple Sunburst,
route.
I think is like the maybe my favorite. Mm-hmm. So when I went to college, they had this thing called Dillo Day toward the end of the year, and it was like a music festival, and it was in May. And it was awesome. It was just
okay.
It was incredible. I think my first year we had Kendrick Lamar.
Dillo Day,
yes.
Great.
Take
me back to Northwestern in 2010.
Okay, we didn't have to say what school it was.
That's right. You guys, you got the mafia, man. I think Herring went there too.
chill. But anyway. Dillo Day was sick. It was like a perfect day by the lake. Tons of artists. As you can imagine, an incredible amount of underage binge drinking starting from 9 a.m. till 9 p.m. Mm. And it was a big day for like throwback basketball jerseys. It was like you'd planned all year like what throwback basketball jersey, and you'd see some good ones. And like I was always happiest to see a Suns purple, the Sunburst. It's iconic. Man, the old Hawks jerseys that had an actual hawk on them, incredible.
That's what we need, right?
Yes, dude, the Raptors playing with T-Mac and Vince in NBA Jam with the Raptor on the uniform. All jerseys are so, like, Toronto's are bad. It's like, yeah, everything is so minimalist. And why don't, like, the real take here is, like, Nike has just done an awful job since taking over.
Terrible job. That is the take. And everyone had such great expectations,
mm-hmm.
and they just have totally fumbled the bag, as the kids would say. And
yeah.
it's very upsetting. as a lifelong swoosh loyalist, I expected
yes,
more.
Yes.
And
listen,
I don't know.
I'm your target audience, Nike. I see the commercial, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to work out so much better if I buy those socks with a little swoosh on it.
Yeah.
My jump shot's going to look so much cooler, and yet you're killing me with these jerseys. They've been so, and there's way too many of them. Half the times I don't know what team is playing.
Yes, I agree that the main jerseys need to be better, and every team in the league needs to chill with this alternate jersey phenomenon where
yeah.
like twice a week they wear a jersey that you've just never
yes.
seen before.
Yes,
it does make League Pass confusing because
yeah.
they also make the courts different now, and it's just like
yes.
everyone take it down a notch, okay? I like having
yeah.
like some familiar reference points. Can I add also, You mentioned the day at your school where everybody is very serious about their jersey choice. Yes, I just want to say for the record, I did not need a day. I was wearing jerseys throughout my time in college and was loving every second of it. It's what I'm most nostalgic for when I think of college. I was like the jersey guy and I spent most of my income.
I cannot even imagine, A, how tall your tees were, and B, how long your shorts were when you were in college.
Honestly, so you know, you were sort of a fashion consultant for me, like as recently as a couple years ago. It's one aspect of life that I've always struggled with. And in college, in particular, I would wear pajamas and like a basketball jersey almost everywhere I went. And then occasionally like throw on an oversized button down when I was trying to meet girls. But I needed a lot of help then. I also needed help in like 2016. And really only in the last like 4 or 5 years have I started wearing clothes that actually fit me. But it was a better time in my life when I was wearing the oversized jerseys.
Does Champs Sports, do they still sell like tall tees? Like, you know, when you walked into Champs, like there was that section that was like, you just knew it was all tall tees. Do you think they still have that?
It's a good question because that's also part of it. You look back at like where fashion was in the early aughts, and like I have a suit from that era. And I mean, I went to a tailor and everything, and yet like it's still like really baggy. And I'm just like, is this, who thought this was okay? Like, isn't this why you go to a tailor? But like back then, everything was just kind of baggier and oversized.
How much money do you think you spent at Champs Sports, if you had to guess, from like 2000 to 2008?
So honestly, Champs Sports was not really my go-to source. I was big, like I was deep into the eBay game.
eBay. I was about to say East Bay was another one, but eBay is even better.
East Bay was definitely like elementary school, like circle stuff, and like hand the magazine to my mom and be like, come on, please, please, please. But by the time I hit high school and college, I was fully on eBay, where you could like get some pretty solid replicas for like $35 or something. And I remember I had like four different Orlando Magic jerseys from back in the day. I had like a Dennis Scott jersey, a Penny Hardaway jersey. So that's sort of like the wavelength I was on.
Kids today will never know the feeling of switching from replicas to a swingman jersey for the first time. Like, that was a big moment when you put on your first swingman and you're like, wow, I made it.
Look at the stitching. And God forbid you had like a girlfriend and you try to impress them with it.
You don't understand. The replica, the numbers are pressed on. These are stitched. Trying to explain it to your just parents like, why this
you look
is
like
important.
A child. Figure it out, please. it's great.
Truly great times. Well, Andrew, just like we look back on those jerseys fondly, we're going to look back on this podcast fondly. We finally did it. Thank you so much for hanging out, man. I really appreciate it. I hope you had a good time. I hope, you know, it felt comfortable. You were right back on the chair, so to speak. I know the Open Floor Globe. I think I'm going to have to announce it. We're recording this on a Thursday. I'm going to have to make a special announcement on Twitter right when we hop off, because I think people are going to be hyped.
Yeah, well, shout out to the Open Floor Globe. I had so much fun hosting Open Floor for as long as I had, as long as I did. And I also love Ro and Pina and Chris Herring, and I'm glad that the podcast is in good hands these days. If people want to hear more from me and Ben Golliver, they can go to goat.supportingcast.fm or just greatestofalltalk.com and subscribe to our show. We do two episodes per week and we've had a lot of fun. And we're going to keep doing it for the rest of the summer, which it could get a little weird as the news well dries up. But we're going to continue all next season as well. And it's been the GOAT era has been good to us. So if anyone wants to hop on the bandwagon, now is a good time because you're going to hear some really weird takes as we descend deeper into the summer.
Well, first of all, thank you for the kind words, because I know how seriously you and Golliver took this podcast, which frankly was too seriously and annoyed everyone who you worked with. So glad we don't have to deal with that anymore. And if you're somehow listening to this podcast and you don't subscribe to GOAT, I don't know how that's possible. I mean it genuinely. It's so great to hear you and Ben on that podcast. Also, the unfiltered nature of the takes on that podcast and just the slander and insults being thrown at professional basketball players is really remarkable. So I'm with you if you aren't subscribed.
It's a benefit of the subscription space. We don't run the risk of like getting really called out. And so we're able to have a little bit more fun.
At no point have I regretted subscribing. So please subscribe to Greatest of All Talk. Please keep your emails coming in to openfloormail@gmail.com. Sharp, I'm sure I'll be texting you something way too hot for a podcast soon. Until then, thank you, buddy.
Awesome, man. This is great. I can't wait to do it again.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat. Literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.